Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Who is homeless in New York? Just when you think you know, a disturbing new report gives us a new twist. Almost 4,000 young people are living on the city's streets, 4,000 under 21. Of those, half are black. About 25% are Latino. That's consistent with what people expected and knew before. But the most unexpected statistic is that almost a third, between a quarter and a third, of homeless youth in New York are gay, lesbian, or bisexual. This is, mind you, about three times the estimated percentage of New York's LGBTQ community in general. In other words, only, what, maybe 7% to 10%, something like that, considered to be gay or lesbian, and maybe 30% of the homeless in that age group, gay and lesbian, so way overrepresented. And why is this? In a bit, we will dig into the numbers with the head of the Empire State Coalition, the organization behind the study, and with a city council member who commissioned it. But first, what is it like to be gay, young, and homeless? And what kinds of services are being offered to this community? Joining me is Teresa Nolan. She's the Director of Youth Services at Green Chimneys, an organization that provides assistance to LGBTQ youth. Also with us, Derek Cobb, 20 years old, who was on the street before he ended up in Green Chimneys and has now gone through the program there. Teresa, Derek, welcome to WNYC. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thanks a lot for joining us. And let's just get the alphabet soup right, Teresa. LGBTQ, okay. A lot of people haven't heard the Q before, and it's not for queer.
Absolutely. We use that for questioning. We include that specifically with the youth that we work with because the idea is that, you know, when you're in your identity development phase, you may be questioning a lot of parts of yourself, including sexual orientation or gender identity. And we're open to working with youth of all sorts of identification. So that's why we stick the Q on the end.
So that's a wide range of members of the community you work with over at Green Chimneys. Tell us about the kids who tend to end up there. Have they been kicked out of their families, rejected because of their sexual orientation?
Yeah, actually, most of them anecdotally tell us that they've been rejected in some way by their families. It's not necessarily as clear-cut as, you know, if you're gay, you need to leave my house, although sometimes that happens as well. A lot of times it's more subliminal messaging, but or abuse that they've experienced over the years, and we even have had young people that have said to us, you know, that there was an ultimatum I was given: I either behave a certain way or I need to leave. And so, you know, a choice, if you want to call it a choice, is for them to go out on their own because they know that they can't make themselves be straight or make themselves be gender conforming because their family wants them to be.
Derek, thanks a lot for being willing to come on and tell us a little bit about your story. How did you wind up homeless in New York, and how did you wind up with Green Chimneys?
Wow, that's a really, really easy question. But about 2 years ago, I graduated high school. At the time, I was dating someone who was, like, way older than me, but my parents threw me out then, and I ended up living with him for a while. At the beginning of this year, the relationship came to an end, and I moved back in with my parents, and it was super, super comforting because at the time, and this is around January of the beginning of this year, they made me feel that as if everything was going to be okay. Like, they really wanted to get to know that side of me and to get to know all the troubles and all the, you know, obstacles that I have to face every day in the world. And it kind of made me feel confident because I just began to open up every part of my life and aspect to them. But soon, you know, after a few weeks, it just kind of took a 360. Everything and everyone that I knew and I loved just completely treated me totally different, gave me looks. I would be locked out the house for hours at a time. I wasn't allowed to use the phone, and I couldn't even eat off the same silverware that they were eating off of.
Was this related to sexual orientation?
Definitely. Like, in their minds, if you're gay, like, you walk around and you sleep with anybody, who comes your way and you have all these kind of diseases or something.
You heard this number from the survey, almost 30% of homeless kids are gay. From your experience on the streets, does that ring true to you?
I most definitely think it's true to me, because a lot of times, like, for some reason, especially in the urban society where I come from, people would prefer you to be a drug dealer, or they would prefer you to be a murderer, they would prefer you to be a rapist rather than just being gay. Like, if you're all those things, that's fine. But if you're gay, then something's wrong with that. Something's wrong with you. And then society has a way that they begin to question your parents and your upbringing. So that's why I think my parents kind of reacted the way they reacted, because now they feel ashamed. Like, what did they do wrong?
That's a heavy thing to say, that it's more acceptable to be a rapist or a murderer than a gay man.
Absolutely. I think to add to what Derek's saying, I think that a lot of people focus on the sexuality part of it, and they think that young people that are identifying as LGBTQ are maybe, behaving in promiscuous ways, or that, you know, their sexual orientation or their gender identity becomes.
How long did you live on the street, Derek, and how did you get by?
I lived on the street for about 6 to 7 months. My cousin, she's the closest thing to in my life. She's the most dearest thing to me. She helped me a lot. She would feed me. She would clothe me. I stayed with my uncle for about a month or two. But eventually, when word got there that I stayed, my parents told him about me, and then he kicked me out again. So she would sneak me in her room. She would send me to her friend's house. I would date guys just to have somewhere to stay. I would call all high school teachers and college professors and everything. And at the time, I was working at Starbucks. And the little money that I had, I would, go to a room for, a day or two, or just, hang out with my friends all weekend, and just, just to find, always keep busy, just to not really think about it and not really worry about it. But it sucks because, when the day's over, the reality of it is that you don't have anywhere to go, and you don't have a place to call your home.
So where'd you sleep?
I slept in Central Park. I slept in Prospect Park. I slept in Sunset Park. I slept on the streets. I slept in train stations. And it's crazy, because you don't imagine that. Honestly, I feel that I'm a really decent young man. I carry myself very well. I'm very productive, and I'm not a bad person. And it just bothers you that people, all they see is that you're gay.
How'd you wind up with Green Chimneys?
A friend of mine, his name is Jameek, he referred me to the program. He gave me the website, and I began to look into the program and look at some information. At first, I was kind of skeptical about it, because it just all seemed too good to be true. And who the hell would want to help out someone who's gay and homeless? You know what I mean? It just didn't make sense. It didn't register in my mind that there was actually a program like this. So I went on the website.
You felt that disenfranchised.
Yes.
And so, Teresa, is it typical for word of mouth to be your best recruiting tool or outreach tool?
Yes, actually, that's what we found statistically at Green Chimneys. Most of the young people that we see come because another friend or someone told them about the program.
And what Derek just said, that he didn't even imagine that there would be any organization out there to help someone in his situation, it really is an incredible reflection of how alienated, how disenfranchised, how discarded people in his position feel.
Absolutely. We see that even at our foster care programs, we see that as well. All of these young people feel like they're so isolated and disconnected from any support network that they can't imagine that there's an entire program devoted to working with them specifically.
So what do you do?
Well, we try to help them feel accepted so that they can work on things like boosting their self-esteem and learning basic life skills, things that all young people really need to do. And we take out that issue of problematizing their sexuality or their gender identity, where when they go to other programs, it becomes the focus, where, that's the gay kid or that's the trans kid. For us, it's not like that. All of the young people are beautiful and wonderful and have all types of possibilities in their lives, and we try to give them the opportunity to see that for themselves.
And we can take phone calls in this segment. Have you been homeless in New York? Have you been homeless as a young person in New York, whether directly or indirectly a result of sexual orientation and people's reaction to it or for any other reason, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And let's take a phone call right now. Paul in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm glad that I heard this subject. I'm 32 now, and I came out and, you know, started my city life when I was in the early 1990s. And what I found at times, it's not everybody, but you do see this. What I found it was hard to keep me in shelter was some of the programs that were out there to help me. I have to say that if you are going to start a program to help youth, that involves trust, and you really have got to give it 150%. But unfortunately, there are programs that have the dream, but don't have the means, and that pushes people mm-hmm. back out.
Interesting. How do you avoid that at Green Chimneys? And do you agree that that's a pattern, Teresa?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, at Green Chimneys, we develop relationships with the young people, and we keep the program a manageable size so that it doesn't just become a warehouse, so to speak. And in that way, you know, people like Garrett can come in and they meet people first, and they develop the relationship so that they learn that we're in this with them, and we make it a team atmosphere. And we function from a base of a positive youth development, which means that we empower the young person to really make their future for themselves. And if they're not ready to, then we work with them on seeing, you know, what the possibilities are in their lives right now.
So, Derek, you're 20 years old now. What are you doing for your future, and what do you hope that future will be?
Well, I'm an aspiring entertainer. Currently, I work in a retail store. I want to go to school.
That's
and I
how
be
we know you're an aspiring entertainer in New York. You're either working as a waiter or in a retail store.
Right.
I know. But, I mean, that's definitely the future. The thing I love about the program is how that I can express myself and tell my ideas and to tell everyone all the things I want to do. And as Teresa said, no one looks at me like I just said something that was completely bogus. Like, they really work with me toward getting that goal, you know. And I think it's such a beautiful thing because people don't believe in you, and sometimes that's all you need, is just a little bit of support. And since I've been in the program, I've been at the top of my A game. I've been on everything so much, and it's been such a blessing. It's been such a big help in my personal life and my professional life as well.
Can I go to May in the Bronx here on line 6, who I think has a related story? Can you, there you go. May in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, May.
How you doing? I've worked in a major mental hospital for like 20 years, and a lot of children that I worked with, teenagers, young adults, were gay, and a lot of them were put out into the streets, and they were brought in. And then a lot of them were from certain religions where gay was not appropriate, having issues about that with their mental issues that they had.
So there's
sad.
Yes, there's another outcome of judging people who are gay and lesbian and other based on their sexual orientation. They might wind up homeless, A. They may wind up in mental institutions, B.
Because they become suicidal. They become regular teenagers, and they have major issues that need to be addressed, and nobody's really addressing those issues. Because if they were, why are all these kids winding up here every year? I mean, they actually jump off of bridges and cut themselves and do a lot of horrible things to themselves and survive to tell the story. And it's really cruel what these kids have to go through.
May, thank you for speaking out. And Derek Cobb, age 20, good luck to you. You may have a career in entertainment. You're good on the radio.
Thank you.
And Teresa Nolan, Director of Youth Services at Green Chimneys, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to the author of this report on homeless gay youth in a minute and take more of your calls. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. WNYC, and check out our new podcast, Digesting Politics. Here's the deal. From now through Super Duper Tuesday, February 5th, WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein and I are sitting down over lunch once a week and talking about the campaign. Digesting Politics is a web-only feature that you will not hear on the radio. So to sign up for the free Digesting Politics podcast, go to WNYC.org. We're talking about homeless gay youth in New York, and let's turn back to this recent report that showed 28% of homeless youth in the city are gay. Margot Hirsch is here in the studio. She's the director of the Empire State Coalition of Youth and Family Services. They commissioned the report. Margot, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much for having me.
This figure, 28%, it's about three times as high as the prevalence of gays and lesbians in the population as a whole. So you demonstrate, at least, if the numbers are right, that they're more at risk of becoming homeless. Is this a new number? Have there been surveys like this before?
We haven't seen any survey that looked at the reasons young people were homeless. About 20 years ago, there was a count of homeless young people in New York City, but that was just a count. And what we found anecdotally over the years is that gay and lesbian youth were overrepresented in the homeless youth population, but nobody had actually done a study of it. And I will say parenthetically that 28% is gay and lesbian youth. We separated out identity, gender identity issues, and that's another 5%.
Plus, it's possible that the rate is even higher because 11%, as I look at this, did not answer the question about sexual orientation one way or the other. And who would have an incentive not to answer that question? Probably people who are gay, lesbian, bi, transgender, et cetera.
Well, there's probably a number in there that didn't answer because of that. You know, and then there, I don't want to assume that it's an additional 11%, but there's certainly an additional number in there of that 11%, yes.
Maybe a few more percent,
yes.
But that's still an indication of it being very high. And I read a national survey done last year that found similar results, and it called the disproportionate number of gay homeless youth an epidemic. What was your methodology? Did you canvass the streets?
We worked in programs that serve homeless youth. We worked in programs that served youth in general. We interviewed on the streets. We interviewed in non-traditional places. You know, we tried to get out as much as possible. We were limited in our ability because we relied on volunteer interviewers, usually people that were working in youth programs at the time. We wanted to be really careful. All of our volunteers had to have been screened and certified to do this by the Institutional Review Board on, you know, to ensure that they were properly prepared to work with the young people. So we went out as much as we could on the piers, on the streets, in the Bronx, on the streets, but a lot of times just in the traditional and non-traditional youth services.
And let's bring in City Councilman Lou Fidler of the Bronx, who was instrumental in getting this study commissioned. Councilman, welcome back to WNYC. Hello. Whoops, do we have, let me try that again. Councilman, I think we have you now, do we?
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Councilman. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Brian, and it's Brooklyn, not the Bronx.
Oh, Brooklyn, I'm sorry. What was your involvement? What's your district? What neighborhoods?
Well, I represent everywhere from Sheepshead Bay to Canarsie in the southeastern coast area of Brooklyn.
And what was your involvement in getting this report going?
Well, I carried the initiative at the council to have the report funded, and then we've been holding hearings for the last 5 years as chairman of the Youth Services Committee on this particular problem, runaway and homeless youth in the city of New York.
The mature gay community, if that's the right word, older gays and lesbians in New York, are they being called upon to assist in any way? Maybe there's an opportunity with some people who are grown-ups, who are established in their lives, to act as mentors, counselors, whatever, do you know?
You know, we have some terrific organizations that are helping runaway and homeless youth in the LGBT community. Certainly, you're familiar with Green Chimneys, Allie Forney, and the adult involvement with those organizations has been terrific. But given the fact that tonight 3,800 children will be sleeping on our streets without a shelter bed, and a third of them approximately are LGBT, there's always room for more help.
So, Margot, what's to be done as a result of this number? I mean, it's one thing to see the number and be really disturbed by it. Are there policy recommendations that come out of this?
Well, I think that there are certainly programmatic recommendations and policy recommendations that can come out of it. I think that we need a lot more outreach and low threshold services throughout the city. Our concentration for the survey was mostly in Manhattan because that's where most of the services are. To the extent that we can get communities to have services and programs available so that young people, gay or not gay, don't feel so isolated when facing problems, we might be able to mitigate some of the homelessness that comes around. Public education, this is not a gay problem. This is not a problem for the gay community. This is a problem for our entire city, that it's not just the responsibility of gay adults to solve this problem. It's all of our responsibility to make sure that young people are not harassed, are not subjugated to, you know, inhuman treatment in their schools and in their communities because of their sexual or gender identity.
I'm so glad that you said that, because an underlying issue, and so many things that we talk about really, is common humanity and who we define as us and who we define as them to take care of their problems. So
Brian, glad
you brought that up. Councilman?
Yeah, and, you know, I just don't understand people who can't bring some sense of compassion to this issue. I mean, you know, you go home, you hug your child, and you think about any child who is homeless in the streets of this city, particularly at this time of the year, having been driven out for one reason or another from the very environment in which they should be most loved, and that they can't sustain that familial relationship, that support network, and they would prefer to sleep in a subway station than in their own home bed. I don't understand that. I think, you know, that having 3,800 kids like that is actually the shame of our cities in the year 2007.
Roger in Manhattan.
Compassion is only the half of it.
Roger in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Roger.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just want to make a quick point. I first moved to New York City in 1985, and I stayed at a place called Hotel 17. You know, came to New York to pursue acting, felt all the things that you were describing in terms of isolation, alienation, disenfranchisement. You know, I didn't know what I came to New York to be an actor. The place I stayed at, Hotel 17, at the time was a wonderful artist community for young, you know, young gay, mostly gay people. Kids from Europe and all that. And I was a straight guy. I was kind of like the lone straight guy that was the disenfranchised one, and I totally got embraced by this gay community at the time. And it's a shame that finances in New York, it's a shame that the city seems to have changed dramatically since the mid-'80s in terms of nobody can afford to live here anymore. Mm-hmm. There are people now that are probably functional that are homeless. You know, are semi-functional. I don't know. There's always many factors involved in these type of situations. It's not just because someone's gay that they're homeless or something. It might be
that's right.
It might be a hybrid of like slight mental illness. No one's helped them along like I was helped along. You know, no one. You know, it's really a shame. And I really wish that there were more places like Hotel 17 or around now to embrace the young, you know, super artistic community. They may be transsexual, and they may be lesbian, they may be gay. You know, they just may not have found their way.
Roger, thank you for that call. And he raises some great issues, Margot. Is he in the same category as most of the people who you found in the survey or who Green Chimneys, who we were talking with before, might serve? He's talking about almost the classic immigrant to New York from elsewhere in America story, you know, an aspiring artist. And he found himself in a supportive community of young aspiring artists from everywhere, many of whom happen to be gay and lesbian. Is that the same population we're talking about here, and they just, you know, fall out of the ability to pay their rent, et cetera, or is it really a different kind of person?
Well, I think for the most part, it's probably a different kind of person, because a lot of the young people that end up homeless have very low educational attainment because they've had problems in school. They're often undiagnosed with learning disabilities. They have mental health problems either that were caused by their homelessness or caused their homelessness or exacerbated by homelessness. But I think that the caller brings up a really good point about needing a full continuum from low threshold to permanent housing, because I think that you need those supports along the way. But also in New York, you can't afford to live. So young people coming out of programs like Green Chimneys, where are they going to be living? Our survey found that most of the young people came from the New York City area that we serve. So we're really talking about our own young people, not young people from other parts of the country. About 20% were born elsewhere, but they still lived in the city.
And a lot of services for youth in New York expire when you're 18 or at the very oldest when you're 21, our Beth Fertig has done some excellent reporting on that over the years, that there's kind of this throwaway semi-generation between 18 and 21 or on into the mid-20s. And you've talked about that, too.
We do talk about that. I think that that's where the policy issues that you mentioned before come up. We've got mental health services where children's services end at 18 and adult services start at 18. And we don't have specialized services that are greatly needed for the adolescent population. We have runaway and homeless youth services that can go up to age 21. But we have found that young people really need supports up to age at least through 24. So, you know, there's that cutoff so that they, you know, young people who are a little bit older have to go into the adult system. The adult system is not designed to meet adolescent needs. It is not developmentally appropriate for adolescents.
Shannon in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Shannon.
Yeah, hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. I run a program at my agency called Arms Acres. We're at 500 8th Avenue. I worked very closely with Kevin Tikar at Green Chimneys. Are you familiar with Kevin?
I'm not. Maybe Margo is.
Yes.
Yeah, I worked with Kevin for many, many years. And I have to say I compliment Green Chimneys because at that point I was unaware that they even existed when Kevin called me and asked me if I would see some of the youngsters because we had an adolescent program for kids who were using drugs, and I specifically started a program for gay and lesbian kids. And they attended it for quite a long time. And then my understanding is that you have an in-house program. Is that correct?
Green Chimneys does.
Green Chimneys does, currently. Is that correct?
Yes.
Right. You're familiar with Safe Space, right?
Councilman?
Right.
Yes, I am.
Safe Space. So Safe Space has got an excellent program also. But the issue of youngsters aging out is a crucial thing. Mm-hmm. Because what I dealt with when I was working with the kids was the amount of fear that these kids had because they had been homeless. They had nowhere to go. And they were terrified that they were going to end up in the same situation again.
Shannon, thank you very much for your call. We're talking about the prevalence of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, sexual orientation questioning youth in the youth homeless population in New York, about a third. In a new report documented by one of my guests, a couple of posts from our comments page. I will be homeless in New York soon, and as I can recall from being in New York last January at the Big Apple Hostel, gay or straight, when it's 20 degrees outside, I don't think gay pride is what's keeping people living on the streets. It's the economy, stupid. But still, I would rather die of cold in New York than spend another year in Memphis, writes this listener. Someone else wrote, I think it's good. A caller brought up the promiscuity issue. Even in media that seems to be tolerant to gays overall, there are a number of stereotypes that continue to be projected, and one of the biggest is the idea that gay men are just these man-hungry sex animals. And certainly there are some out there, but there's also a lot of heterosexual men who act like that, as we all know, writes another listener. Mary in Mahwah, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I was telling your screener that I work with the poor. I'm an attorney, though, in Newark, and I've run into situation after situation where a kid gets to be 14, 15, and we would have called them years ago incorrigible. Their parents are fine, but they have rules that they want the kids to live by. Be home by 10 o'clock. No, you can't hang out when the limelight was there. This one sticks in my head. You can't hang out at the limelight till 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. And the kids would leave home. How much of these kids don't have horrible parents? They just have parents with rules.
Councilman Fidler?
You know, the survey can't really tell you that, but I have to say I have a kind of an adverse reaction to that entire comment. No matter how good or bad, and if you want to use the epithet bad, a kid could be or a parent could be, the one place in the world where they should be loved and accepted and you find a way to work it out is in your home. And if that situation is broken down to the point where someone would rather live on the street or sell their body, 150 kids tonight, gay and straight will be have shelter only because they are having sex with somebody in order to have shelter. If that relationship is broken down to that point, then there's fault all around, and we should be finding ways to make sure that those relationships don't break down.
Margo, do you want to comment on that?
I do also want to comment on it because I think that for for all of the young people that I know, most of them would rather be living at home. They would, most of them would much prefer to be living in a loving household. They have strong, loving feelings about their parents. So they're on the streets because the relationship at home has become so toxic that they cannot afford emotionally to remain there. And often there's a lot of physical, verbal, and emotional abuse that goes on as well. So I think that this perception that young people are on the streets because they don't want to follow rules, there is, of course, a small percentage that are going to be like that. But the majority that we have seen, the vast majority, I would say in the 99 percentile, are on the streets because they have no other resource. They have no other options.
Wait a minute.
Brian, if I could add, maybe a quarter of the young people are on the streets because they've aged out of foster care, which is another huge problem that we're going to be looking at in the next couple of months.
Mary, anything you want to come back on this with?
I just wanted to ask this. As part of this program, is any attempt made to contact the parents? And I agree completely, because it's the foster care kids that I deal with this man, that they age out of the foster care system. Many, many of them have been drugged by the system, with ADHD, with this, with that, the other, and then they're let go, boom, and they don't even have a way to get their Paxil or their any medications. It's unbelievable.
Margo?
Yes, Mary, I agree. We had about a third of the young people had been in foster care at some point in their lives, so that's a huge issue. When a young person comes to a program, there is always an attempt immediately to contact the parent and to make some sort of reconciliation. Sometimes that reconciliation is an emotional reconciliation. They don't necessarily have the ability to go back and live at home. But we also have young people whose parents are incarcerated, whose parents are deceased, whose parents have moved away. So, you know, we have a lot of issues with young people where reconciliation is not always possible.
And one more call on the parents. Mary Beth in Monmouth, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mary Beth.
Hi, Brian. Yeah, just a quick question, which is, you know, children of divorce are expected to be supported by their parents one way or another. And I was just curious as to whether or not there was any way to tap the parents of these children to support the programs that, you know, you're discussing. You know, financially, they should remain responsible, whether or not emotionally they can really help or be with their kids.
Councilman, I guess legally it gets difficult since we're talking about people over 18 in many cases.
Right, and certainly when you hit the 18 barrier, that becomes an irrelevant issue. You know, obviously a number of these kids are under 18, and there are state laws that, you know, very clearly force non-custodial parents to help support their kids, whether they're living at home or not. That obligation wouldn't change.
Julie in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Julie.
Hi, good morning. I live in the West Village near Christopher Street, where a lot of these kids seem to wind up. And they're aggressive and angry, and they act out. And I understand, you know, being gay and everything, but why isn't there some sort of outreach into the communities where they come from to say, like, it's okay to be gay? You know, because they come down there, and it's just, like, it's just maddening.
When
what
you
they
say
do, I mean, I've been spit on by these people.
What age people are you talking about?
Anywhere from 14 to 22. And the LA Times wrote an article about Christopher Street about a year and a half ago where, like, the older guys, the older white guys, the Stonewall kind of guys that live along Christopher Street,
right,
they've been beat up by these kids.
Margo?
You know, they're not, and they come when there's Gay Pride Parade Day,
right,
we leave town because what they do to the neighborhood is just terrible. I mean, it's... they don't seem to appreciate what, like, the older gay guys went through to get accepted.
Right.
And I'm sorry they come from these communities, but don't come to my neighborhood and trash it.
Anytime there are thousands of people congregating on one strip, some of that's going to happen. But, Margo, what about that generational dynamic and, for that matter, class dynamic that she seems to be referring to?
Well, I think anytime you have a group of disenfranchised young people, there's going to be anger. One of the comments I made previously was, I think we do need more community services so that young people don't feel the need to congregate outside of their own communities, that they do feel more comfortable, more supported in their own communities. There are thousands of people that come to the village every day and hang out.
Partly because they feel there's nowhere else to go.
Because they feel there's nowhere else to go. And it's not only gay youth.
Right. And so the most angry, the most disenfranchised, the most troubled may be the most likely to wind up there in a concentration. Councilman, a last word, and then we're out of time.
Well, you know, some of the undercurrent of some of your questions here are, you know, why are we kind of paying for this? And, you know, if you can't get your hand around the compassion, just bear in mind that every one of these young people on the street is more likely to become HIV positive, more likely to become a burden to the criminal justice system, more likely to develop a mental illness or disability. And the cost of treating any one of those things is less than the cost of the shelter bed. So if you can't grit the compassion, get the economics, be sensible, we really need to take care of these kids.
By the way, tying our last segment on charitable donations to this one, a caller wants to know, is Green Chimneys a tax-deductible charitable contribution organization? And the answer is yes, it is. And we have linked to them on our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer's show. And I want to thank Margot Hirsch, Executive Director of the Empire State Coalition of Youth and Family Services, which released this survey on the prevalence of homeless gay youth, and City Councilman Lou Fiedler, who helped to commission it. Councilman from South Brooklyn, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in a minute. How much would you pay for a ticket to chant Fire Isaiah? Stay with us.